All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is February the 3rd, 2023. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. Chilly, cold, windy. It's actually a little chilly and cold and windy for me, but it's still a beautiful day. Super blessed. Got up this morning. I'm starting to get into a new routine with my buddy, and we're running. We had committed really to running on Fridays, and today's Friday, so we ran. But I actually called him during the week and asked if maybe we could do a Wednesday run. And so we're going to try to, you know, get back to running a couple times a week, if at all possible. I was checking the weather last night, and it was calling for 15 degrees this morning, and I was nervous. Honestly, running in 15 degrees isn't that bad, as long as it's not windy. If it's windy, that's a little different story. But luckily, I got up this morning and went down there. I got up at 5:30. What? Went down there, met him at 6:30, had to make all the kids lunch for school, and then met him down there at 6:30, and it was beautiful. It was like 35 degrees, which is, you know, I know to some people is very cold. I get that, but I personally really enjoy running in that kind of weather, just as long as it's not windy. And we did run on Wednesday here in the East Coast, and we actually ran in snow, which was cool too. Because if you're a runner, or if you've ever been out running, and or even just, you know, there's nothing better than like hanging out and doing stuff out in the snow when it's just this calm, casual snow, not blowing 100 miles an hour, and that's sort of how the run was. It had rained all night, so it was a little sloppy, but it was still a lot of fun. So I've run twice this week. Very, very excited about that. I just feel better when I run. That's pretty much what it comes down to. And what a gift, you know. I don't know if I've shared this, but back in the day of my drinking and drugging, I used to also smoke this cigarette. And, you know, I love smoking cigarettes. I thought it was awesome. But after a while, many years of doing it, it was starting to kind of become a gross habit. And I didn't want to do it anymore. But like every other addiction, you just, you know, it's hard to quit. So I had to find something that I wanted more than smoking, and that would turn out to be running. And you know, I started smoking when I was probably 15, stealing cigarettes from my mom. She didn't really care. That is so funny. Back in those days, my mom, she didn't really care if we smoked. They didn't care if we drank or smoked. They just didn't want to smoke a pot or doing drugs. But that's when I started smoking. And you know, would smoke until, you know, probably 37, 36 maybe. And actually, I quit smoking in 99. And the way that I did it is I wanted to run. And so I had flirted with running and exercising when I had gone up to Rutgers for my degree in turf management. But I would go to this little gym where was it? Somewhere up in New Jersey, in New Brunswick. And I would go to this little gym, and I would run on this treadmill, and then I would go back out to my car and have a cigarette. So, but it was the beginning, right? I'm not sure, you know, there's always, you know, whether it's alcohol or drugs, I mean, I think we always are trying to, at some point, attempting to try to figure out how to quit, right? It's tough. It's tough to quit smoking. It's definitely tough to quit drinking. It's tough to quit any addiction, to be honest. And for me, like I said, I had to find something I really loved better. So running would be it. And I didn't give up. And I would run down the block and then walk 8 times around the block. And then I would run halfway around the block and walk 7.5 times around the block and just kept setting these little goals, right? And, you know, if I could just make it another 20 feet next time and then I'll walk. And that's exactly what I did. And quit smoking. And became a runner, and just have been so grateful for that. Because, you know, I've said, or I like to say, that if you want to learn about yourself, start running, right? Because you will learn who you are and how you think and what you think about. And, you know, it's a it's really, to me, running is how I started to learn about the spiritual awakening and, you know, how these higher and lower powers work in my life and the roles they play and the decisions that I make. And, you know, I had to pay attention, though, right? You know, I go for a run, and right away I can just feel this mental thing where I'm sort of attacking, like, people I'm jealous of. And, you know, it's sort of like doing a fourth and fifth step through 5 miles, right? And sort of list of people and decide that I hate them all and then figure out why and then sort of make an amends and then, you know, start over again the next day. But it's a real adventure spiritually running. And, you know, when I get up to go for a run, there's all these, you know, voices, or not voices, but just feelings like, oh, man, it's going to be too cold. You know, your knee hurts. It's always that there's a river of excuses come flowing at me before I want to do anything that requires a lot of effort. But once I take that first step to the run, you know, that lower power says, all right, I'll just wait here on the curb. What's up, Eddie? Sing it, Eddie. But yeah, so that's what I've pretty excited about that. Because on the other side of it, when I don't run, and which I haven't really been doing that much of, you know, I feel sort of bad about myself. And I shouldn't do that either. But, you know, it's something that I like to do. And, you know, when I start to, you know, go a week or 2 weeks, and of course, you know, part of the, you know, back in the day when I was doing all the running, I was very sad, right? I was just trying to figure out a way to feel better about myself, right? I mean, smoking did not help me feel good about myself. You know, you see, you know, a lot of people come into the program after a long run and they're, you know, their skin doesn't look good, their hair doesn't look good, their, you know, their weight doesn't look good, teeth, whatever it is. And, you know, to feel better about ourselves is like almost the number one priority. It's like, God, I know when I put down the drink, I immediately did feel better. I definitely felt better about myself. But when I started to run and then I finally quit cigarettes, because, you know, I wouldn't say it's a secret, but, you know, ideally when I got sober, I wanted things to get better. I mean, I wanted a better job. I wanted a better girlfriend. I wanted a better life. And it didn't take long for me to start thinking about it, right? Usually they'll say, you know, wait a year before you make any big decisions, like a new girlfriend, a new relationship, a new job, you know. Wait a year before you make any choices like that. And I'm like, shit, I want to find a new girlfriend like right away. I want to find a decent girlfriend. And the first thing I thought I needed to do was quit smoking. Like, nobody's going to want to go out with a smoker. And but just kind of sad, right? And so I really turned to running and you know, overdid it in running probably. I mean, I didn't get hurt, but I definitely put a lot of effort into it, got very caught up in it. And so today, you know, fast forward today, I'm not that sad anymore, right? My life's really good. I have a, you know, wonderful wife, wonderful family, great job, right? I'm sober, have a lot of great friends, get to do fun things like podcasting and bringing, you know, I think I've shared, we do another podcast, Rehoboth Social, which is, you know, helping small business and, you know, get to bring people in. And I did a podcast this week with a bunch of guys that are headed to the NFL Combine. That train at a gym here, Outtrain. Shout out to Outtrain. These kids to help them get ready for the freaking NFL Combine. And I got to do a podcast with them. It was such an honor, right? You know, that somebody can trust me enough to sit down and try to curate a message that helps these kids. And, you know, they've done all the work. They're doing amazing stuff. They don't need any help, but it's a privilege to sit down and share their story. And so, you know, my life is fantastic. So for me to, you know, try to run, you know, back in the day, I was running 3, 4, 5 days a week, right? I would run in the rain and the snow and the cold. That's why this morning when Jimmy and I were going to run, I was like, yeah, it's supposed to be 15. And one of the things I love doing is we run on this trail, the Junction Breakwater Trail, down to this bridge that kind of crosses this little canal that overlooks the marsh that is just fantastic when the sun rises. And, you know, I like to scratch in the temperature on the frost on the wooden rails of the bridge. And, you know, I take a picture of it and sort of tack it to my Nike app and, you know, serving self a little bit. I mean, can't stop having fun, right? And so, you know, we love doing that, but I was thinking this morning I would get to do that. Didn't do that. Wasn't that cold. But I guess the whole point is that I'm happy, right? So I got to figure out how to bring running back in my life. And one of the ways that I do it and is sort of the way, you know, I get sober is I can't do it alone, right? I have to do this with somebody else. And my buddy James is, we're roughly the same age. He's a little bit older, but, you know, over 50, right? And, you know, and he wants some of the same things I want. I want to feel better. And, you know, the weird part about getting old is that, you know, our digestive system works a little differently, right? And so we can get sedentary. We can get, you know, lackadaisical, not a lot of activity, and start to feel kind of unhappy in your insides. And so one of the greatest things about running for me is, you know, it just keeps everything moving, right? You run 4 miles like we did this morning, running up and down. Everything gets shaken loose, and then eventually it all comes out, and it's awesome, right? As I get older, few things are at the top of the list that are awesome, and that's one of them, is that, you know, nature calls. But, yeah, so it keeps me active. And so we're really trying to put some effort into it. Like I said, we ran twice this week. We ran once last week, and committed to see. I said, I'll see you on Wednesday. And just start, you know, feeling better. And I tell you, as soon as I get done running, my shoulders go back a little bit, right? My chest comes out a bit. You know, my stomach doesn't feel so distended. My legs feel tight. It just, everything just feels good. I feel alive. I feel connected. And it's just, it's, for me, it is amazing mental medication. And so just great. Just super happy that that's going down. And but I also thought I would just kind of, you know, recap the week a little bit. You know, I did go to the meeting on Monday. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Absolutely. You know, I came to believe that I could run, right? One day at a time. I came to believe. The difference, I think, with running is the struggle between the higher power, right? A power greater than ourselves. And what does that mean? What am I signing up for? You know, with running, it's like, yeah, I want to run. Oh, so do I have to join a running club? Do I have to get all new running gear? You know, what am I committing to? And it's sort of the same thing, I guess the same fear that I had when I was when I came to that step, which was, you know, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I'm just like, I don't know what that is. That religion, right? Is this church? So I had to figure it out. But, you know, one day at a time. And the other thing I was thinking about is that, you know, I share in, on this podcast my journey, you know, of celebrating just obviously 14 years. But, you know, it's been a, I don't know if grind's the word, but it's been a grind, right? You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and it's not like I go to a meeting a month. You know, I've been going to a lot of meetings, and I've had a lot of ups and downs, and I've had a lot of moments where I said, I'm done with this, and I've had a lot of moments where I said, I'm so grateful for this, and you know, but you go through all that, and, you know, one of the things that the slogans on the wall is easy does it. And I was thinking about that last night. I've always just said easy does it, right? Easy does it. But, or is it easy does it? Easy does it. I don't know. But I know from what I take from that statement is that just take it easy, right? I was talking to somebody yesterday about running, and I said, listen, if you want to run, run. First thing that always comes out of somebody's mouth when I say you should try running, they're like, I can't run. I can't run. And I'm like, well, listen, I can't run. I couldn't run either. But, you know, you figure out a way. And I said, listen, if it, you know, if you run 10 feet and then walk a mile, right? And then the next time you run 12 feet and then walk a mile, and the next time you run 20 feet, right? And just keep working at it. And it's sort of like getting sober. You know, I came to my first meeting and I was like, oh my God, what the fuck have I signed up for? And I didn't want to go in. And this is, you know, and I don't know if I've shared before, but, you know, I've had experience with an AA and NA programs for a big portion of my life. You know, we were going to NA and AA at 15 and 16 years old. My dad was always trying to get us to go to meetings, and, you know, and I've been on both sides. I've been the last one to walk in the room, the first one to run out the door. I've been to, you know, never showing up and telling my parents that I had gone. I've been, you know, I've gotten there a half hour late. I've done all of it to avoid going to meetings. And it is just a, but, you know, it happens slowly. And I remember when I had first come back, really with an effort, you know, I was like, I don't know what I'm getting involved in. And, but one of the cool things that happened when I first came into the room is that everybody welcomed me, for one, but I also sort of started hanging out with this small little group of people. It was two women, three men. I've shared my buddy Rick. He was one of them, you know, but it was just like little crew, right? And like, we'd go get coffee after meetings. We'd go have dinner, right? We'd have men's breakfasts. We would do all these cool little things that, because in the beginning, for me, getting sober and going to meetings wasn't amazing. It felt good, but it was still early, right? I'm still not that far separated from the life that I was living. So it was a great distraction to have some other people that were doing the same thing that were like, hey, man, you want to join us for some coffee after the meeting? And I was like, yeah, right? And I had to say yes. Like, I mean, I didn't have to, but I had to make an effort, right? Because everything inside me was saying, no, I don't want to hang out with these people. I don't know these people. These people are probably going to be dorks or, you know, nerds or something, whatever the word is. But the point is that my first thought wasn't yes, but I had to, and I think I've realized this. If you're new to getting sober, you're going to start to realize this. It's one surrender after another. And the surrender of that one was whatever the voice or whatever the thought was saying that don't hang out with these people, they're not cool, I had to ignore and say, yes, I would love to, right? Because what did I know? Up until this point, my friends were the guy that sold liquor at the liquor store, the people that I worked with, and anybody that could handle hanging out with an obnoxious, over-drinking asshole. And if those are the people, and if there were some, they were probably just like me. So the quality and depth of friends that I had prior to getting sober was not good. It was not good. So I'm like, you know, what can I lose? And it was so wonderful. And So on Wednesday, I went to my Wednesday meeting, and there was a lady there celebrating 38 years. And she was one of the women that asked me to have coffee with them. You know, and she's been a great friend ever since I've been sober. I see her all the time. It's always, hey, oh my God, you know. And to see her celebrate 30 years was just fantastic. And I shared in the meeting, I said, listen, if it wasn't for you, I don't know if I would have stayed. Right? I mean, if it wasn't for you, I don't know if I would have found enough positives in this situation than negatives. Right? If it wasn't for her inviting me to, which then I would later meet my friend Rick, and I would, you know, meet all these different people and become friends with and become accountable to sober people, I'm not sure if I would have stayed. So it was just, but, you know, it's like everything else. I had to come to believe that this might work. I had to come to believe that these people might be, you know, cool people to hang out with. And I'll still never forget when I got sober how many people, like after maybe being sober a month and like walking through town and or the grocery store or the outlets or wherever it is, and just constantly seeing people that were in the program. And, you know, we'd point at each other, hey, you know. We didn't have to say, hey, I know you're from the meeting, right? It was like, we quietly understood that we were saying hi, but we are anonymous. And it was just, I had never, you know, my life was so black and white. You know, in the past, it was people, you know, looking for drugs. Can I get drugs? Who do I owe money to? It was always shady. But to see people that were, you know, legitimately, you would ask, how are you, man? How you doing? You know, how's it going? You doing okay? You know, because, you know, most people that are in a program or that attend meetings, you know, see newcomers come in, and that's what I was, a newcomer. And so they legitimately would come up and say, hey, you doing all right? You know, you got my number? You know, I know you won't call, but if you want to, you got my number right there, please. And I was just like in awe of that. And so that's why I always try to, whenever there's a newcomer, I always try to go over and say hello and introduce myself. And if they had passed around a phone number list or something, you know, please, you know, if call the number. I can say I've never had anybody call me that I can remember. But, yeah, so, you know, it was great to see that. You know, and I forget what the topic was. But it turned into really just, you know, what a wonderful lady she is. And to be sober 38 years, I remember her father was in the program, and I'm good friends with her son. And she's just a pillar, right, in the community. And I think all because she's sober. Right? She's a nice person. I never knew her prior to getting sober, so I couldn't tell you what she was like in her drinking days. But I've just known her as a wonderful, wonderful person. And highly respected. And I won't say it's completely because she got sober, but I would say it's 90%, right? I mean, I'm 90% better because I got sober. I'm sure there's a 10% part of me that's still a little fucked up, but I'm definitely gotten better from getting sober. So I guess the point in all that is that, you know, easy does it, right? I love that saying, you know, time takes time. You know, I wanted so much when I got in this program. I wanted everything, you know, 36 years of debauchery to get better in a week. And it's just not possible. But, you know, I had to keep reminding myself, hey, I'm not drinking and driving, right? That was my biggest hang up. And every day that I wasn't drinking and driving, I was happy. I was definitely happy. But the first year of sobriety, I remember going to my first New Year's Eve. I went to a sober New Year's Eve party, and it was horrendous. I'll never forget. We're a bunch of sober people dancing to Macarena, and I was like, ugh, this can't be as good as it gets right here. It was. That's as good as it gets. But, you know, I had to also lower my expectations. I also started having to put, you know, a check mark on things that are actually valuable in my life and start checking off things that really don't play any role but that I have put value in to, right? Which was like partying and, you know, all the shit that goes along, playing darts, right? My skills in darts and pool. Who fucking cares, right? I'm not a pool player, and I'm not a professional dart player. I'm not going to bars anymore, so fucking who cares about those things? So I had to let go of some stuff. But I had, you know, you just have to start, or I just needed to start really taking a hard look on a daily basis of all the wonderful gifts that were coming my way and really respect them and be grateful for them. And when I did go out and drink, you know, I had lost all that. And it was horrible. Horrible. So I'm so glad that I'm back. And, you know, I got to be there for her 38-year anniversary. It was pretty freaking cool. But what else? Let me see. Maybe we can do a little reading, chat about that for a secchi. I tried to do this podcast. I know I said, good morning. This is the Russ. What is this? I am sorry about last night. But it's actually in the afternoon. I just finished work. Been very busy, but I took tomorrow off. It is my anniversary, so we got friends coming in town. We're going to be hanging out.
Please unplug your headphones from this device.
Oh. Interesting. Guess you can't do the square through a podcast. let's see here. Daily reflections. Let's see what we got. Filling the void. February the 3rd. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or he is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. Yeah. You know, the willingness. Well, hold on. Let me finish reading this, I guess. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 47. I was always fascinated with the study of scientific principles. I was emotionally and physically distant from people while I pursued absolute knowledge. God and spirituality were meaningless academic exercises. I was modern man of science. Knowledge was my higher power. Given the right set of equations, life was merely another problem to solve. Yet my inner self was dying from my outer man's solution to life's problems, and the solution was alcohol. In spite of my intelligence, alcohol became my higher power. It was through an unconditional love which emanated from AA people and meetings that I was able to discard alcohol as my higher power. The great void was filled. I was no longer lonely and apart from life. I had found a true power greater than myself. I had found God's love. There's only one one equation which really matters to me now. God is in AA. Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. I didn't you know, it's weird. I was unaware of a void. I was unaware of the deficiency of humility that I had. But I was still pretty young. You know, I know there are people that go through a big portion of their life drinking and using and unfortunately don't find recovery. If they do find it at all, they find it at a later age. And so I can't imagine like living 40 years on vodka, right? I mean, I drank when I was younger. I dove deep into the bottle of vodka basically about 1994. You know, I had moved to Delaware, and I had moved in a matter of 7 days. And 7 days earlier, I was a meth addict. I was doing speed. I was addicted to speed, and I was addicted to the speed lifestyle. And that's all that I knew. I had no void. I was just full of self and running the streets. And jumped in a U-Haul and drove five or seven days across the United States to Delaware. And when I got to Delaware, I had left the meth addict back in California. And that's only because there was no meth here in Delaware. No speed. Hadn't gotten here yet. You know, I'd love to say, yeah, I got sober, yeah. I'm afraid if meth would have been here, I would have had a whole nother series of trouble. Because that one's tough. I really struggled on that one. I was in jail. I'm like, I'm never, ever going to do meth again. I got high the day I got out. It was so bad. But, you know, once again, you know, everything I was doing there, I was a victim of, right? I gotten caught. I had to go to court. I had to, you know, act better. I had to pretend that I gave a shit, right? All the bullshit that we put out there when we're getting ready to go to court, right? And I was a victim. And then I got sent to jail. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm in jail. I'm a victim of jail. You know, I was just a victim. And when you're a victim like that, you're a mess. I was a mess. And so, but when I came over to Delaware and then that wasn't here, the only thing left was alcohol. And I put all of my effort that I had put into everything else prior to moving to Delaware into drinking. And that's when I went downhill. And so from February of 94 to March 31st of 97, I became a serious daily vodka drinker, drunk driver, blackout drinker, and then put enough alcohol in me and I would try anything, right? Smoking crack, doing whatever. It didn't matter. It was bad. And just, but, you know, I think, so I was, I don't even know how old I was. I was probably 30 something, but whatever. I finally got off it. But, you know, I didn't have a huge void. I was just basically uneducated in this stuff, spiritual awakening, spirituality. The only spirituality conversation I had ever had was, "Dear God, what can you fix or give me?" You know, I've shared before, God and Santa were really the same. You know, we used to go to church. I used to draw on the little papers they gave us. I didn't listen. I didn't understand. I didn't understand any of it. And then when I started, like I said, started running, I started to really pay attention to these, you know, and I don't have voices in my head. I'm not insane, but I have thoughts and feelings and persuasions and, you know, this whole conversation that can take place in my head of thoughts. And I hadn't really paid any attention to them. And I started to expose them more and more through running and these higher power and this lower power and, you know, how I could start a run and feel overwhelmed with anxiety and fear and worry. And by the end of the run, have not a care in the world, right? And I would learn that self-centered fear side of me didn't want to be around when I was going to push through and find the miracle on the other side. And, you know, that happens with running all the time. So finally I'm running, right? Left self back there at the curb. I'm finally running. And now I'm dealing with this other self, this other version that's like filling me, throwing negative shit at me. "You're tired. You know, I'm running, right? I'm running. I'm into it. You're tired. Maybe you should walk." I'm like, "God damn, you know, can't I just have a minute, right?" And I'm like, "I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep on running. I'm going to keep on running." It's like, "You need to stop. You're tired." And then I finally stop. I'm like, "What'd you stop for, right?" And I start running again. I'm like, "What is this? What is this voice? What is this other world, this spirituality world, right? What is this?" Because it's clearly a thought. It's clearly a conversation. You know, what dimension is it existing in, right? And but that, you know, I would start to learn about that. And then finally coming into the program, and I've shared before, I searched and searched and searched for that spiritual awakening. You know, the spiritual buddy that was going to pop out of the floor and be my friend, like Wally, right? My spiritual Wally. "Come on, Wally. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. Tell me spiritual stuff." But what I've learned, right, and I learned it also through running, is that when I remove that self, when I remove self-centered fear, I'm a spiritual being already, right? I'm a spiritual being. I'm alive, right? And then I would slowly learn that I wake up every day perfectly a spiritual awakening every day. The only thing that affects my spiritual awakening is self-centered fear and fearful moments. And then I'm starting to realize that, like, has every thought, every idea, every decision I've made been based on fear? You know, you start in the big book, it says we got like this because of fear. We started drinking out of fear. And I was like, no, I didn't. I started drinking because we were partying. But, you know, peel it back a few more layers. And next thing you know, I remember I was afraid that someone wouldn't like me if I didn't drink. So it's absolutely true. But everything I've done in my life has sort of been based in fear. You know, got to go to school, got to go to work, got to do this, got to do that. Why? I don't want to get kicked out. I don't want to lose a job. I don't want to lose money. I don't want people to be upset at me. It's all like, you know, I wake up in the morning, alarm goes off, bink, fear shows up, right? What's the alarm going off for? I have to be somewhere. Shit, I got to get ready. I got to squeeze a bunch of stuff in before I can do this, right? Or I'm going to be late. So I'm all of a sudden living in a self-centered sort of world because self-centered fear is self. And so I'm, you know, and then it's, you know, I got to get to work, and then I got my first client. Do I have enough color? Is it going to have to be enough time? Are they on time? Every single decision I make is sort of based in fear, you know, except when you're like, I think I'm going to watch TV, right? I don't think that that's fear-based. So not everything I do in a day is based in fear, but a big portion of it is. And then I realized my whole life has been that way. My whole life has been self-centered fear drizzled over it all my life. Wow. I mean, what a huge revelation that's been. You know, everything I've done, every job, every school, everything I've done was all based in fear. You know, and I'm the guy, right? I wreck my life, and then I try to find scraps of some sort of job or something I can do, right? And I'm like, I'm afraid I'll never find another job, right? Get a girlfriend, she's not perfect, right? But I'm afraid I'll never find another one. So we stay in these things, and we stay in these jobs and these relationships, and we stay in the bottle. I wasn't afraid to quit drinking. That I know. I wasn't afraid to quit drinking. I did miss it, though. But I think that's just because it was a long-term relationship that I had just become accustomed to. But the fear is what keeps us from having the spiritual awakening. Or I shouldn't say that. Fear is what kept me from having a spiritual awakening. And so what does that mean? Manage the fear, right? And try to figure it out, you know. In every situation, who's talking to me? Which shoulder? Which little person? Which on which shoulder? Remember that magazine, Mad Magazine, and it used to have Spy versus Spy, and it was always like the bad guy and the gets the good guy. Well, that's sort of what's like on my shoulders. I got the good guy and I got the bad guy. The good guy's like, hey, man, you better do this or this is what's going to happen out of fear. And then the good guy's like, hey, man, doesn't matter. You're not drinking. You're not doing drugs. It'll all work out. And then you start to kind of live that lifestyle. It's all good. My buddy Matt was so chill, right? He was so chill, and his chillness exposed my self-centered fear, right? He'd be like, why don't you come over, man? I'd be like, yeah, all right, I'll come over. Matt wants me over. I'm going over. Go over and sit there. And then he wouldn't say anything. We'd just sit, right? And he'd be like, yeah, it's pretty busy today. And I'm like, full of fear, because I'm like, shit, I want to have a conversation. Am I going to say the right thing? Am I going to be, you know, intellectual conversation with this guy? Am I going to, you know, make him think? Am I going to have something that's going to, you know, blow his mind? Because that's what I want, because that's, you know, that's the guy I want to be. I want to be the guy that blows everybody's mind with thought, and it's not who I am. And I would start talking and just out of nervous fear, and he'd be like, you know, sounds good, you know, and I'd be like, oh my God. And then I started to realize, hey, what's going on? Why am I, you know, one of the worst things about me is that the only thing I have ever known is me. So whenever a conversation would come up, the only thing I could relate it to was me. And I didn't even realize that. And somebody pointed it out, and all I was like, oh. And then I realized I did it on everything. And so my next goal, don't say anything, right? So I'd go over to Matt's and he'd be saying nothing. And I'd be like, I'm not saying a thing. I'm just going to sit here. I don't need to, right? I'm not afraid. It's all good. But it would, you know, I would learn about myself through these kind of things. And it's all spiritual, right? You know, my day is fine every day. The only problems I have are self-centered fear, things I'm scared of. And, you know, I have to remind myself, I have to revert back to the fact is, as long as I'm not drinking, I got a chance to do anything I want in my life, right? Nothing can stop me. I could be anything, try anything. You know, I have nothing that's going to stop me like I used to. And what used to stop me was drinking, but I don't do that anymore. So I can be whoever I want to be, and I don't have to worry about it as long as I stay sober. And so, yeah. I hope everyone's doing all right, you know. Do you have a lot of self-centered fear? Do you struggle with spirituality? Are you searching for that spiritual awakening? Are we maybe trying at a different, could we try a different path? Could we look at it, you know, like I shared before, and it made a lot of sense to me, and it's helped me in my life, is that, you know, it's like the story of the Corvette. You know, here's your car. I'm going to put the keys in the garage. I'm going to fill the garage with boxes, and I'm going to shut the door. You have it. You do have a spirit, but trying to figure out how to drive it because you can't get the keys to it. And realizing that on every box it says something in self-centered fear, and all those boxes of self-centered fear is what's not allowing us to find the spiritual awakening. Pretty interesting. I don't know. I hope everyone has a great day. Hang in there. Take it easy. Time takes time. One day at a time. You know, all those great things. We came to believe. I came to believe that one day I could maybe get sober. And with a lot of meetings and a lot of work and working with others and the big book and, you know, one day at a time it's happened. So have a great day. Later. If I don't